Hello, and welcome to the Whistler, issue number 2 for December 1988. Well, let's start issue number 2 with all the boring bits of administration. Get them over and done with. First of all, may I introduce myself? I'm David Calderwood. I work for Dolphin Systems for the Disabled, and my concern within the company is support for users, and that's one of the reasons for this magazine's existence. We'll be looking at a whole range of products, Dolphin products as well as others, and be looking at all sorts of interesting bits and pieces from various users all over the country. I should say at this point, of course, that Dolphin Systems can only accept responsibility for their own products and not others, and that the views expressed in this magazine are not necessarily the views of Dolphin Systems for the Disabled Limited. Stand by for an address. Yes, folks, Rita and I have actually moved. It came about just a couple of weeks ago. That's at the end of October. And we're very happily settled now into our little bungalow. So if you need to write to me or send me any bits and pieces, here is the address. It's number 97 Keishabury. And I'll spell Keishabury for you. It's K-H-A-S-I-A-B-E-R-R-Y. The name of the village is Walnut Tree, two words, Walnut Tree, and that's Milton Keynes. The postcode is MK77, D for Dolphin, S for Systems. What a company, man. And my telephone number is 0908 608 666. And that line is open, standard office hours, 9 through 5, Monday to Friday. Right, and just finally, if you've actually been given a copy of this magazine by somebody else, or they've run off a copy for you, and you want to receive your own copy in future, this is the way to get one. Please would you send a good quality C60 cassette. And somebody asked me to recommend a make. Well, I always use TDK cassettes myself, the TDK D60, or even better, the AD60 is a very good cassette. Unfortunately, some of the cheaper makes actually are more like C55s than C60s, so you might lose a bit at the end of each side of the cassette, as well as mess up the heads of the fast copier if you use cheap cassettes. So a good quality C60 cassette, please, in a standard postal wallet, with your address on one side of the label and this address on the other side. The Whistler, number 15, Park Close, that's park as in parking a car, 15 Park Close, Cossington, which is C-O-S-S-I-N-G-T-O-N, that's Bridgewater, Somerset. And the postcode is TA78LG. That's Tango Alpha 7 8 Lima Golf. And Pete Mead, who does the copying for us, asked me to pass on to you that if you have a message that you send back on your tape, then please put a rubber band around the tape. Please don't send him anything in Braille because he can't read it. Let's take the A prompt. Well, the first article on this side of the tape comes from Captain Ray Hazan. Ray's a very good friend of mine, and he's the assistant PRO at St Dunstan's. It's all yours, Ray.
Thank you, David. I'd like to talk about keyboard macro programs, i.e. those programs which enable you to redefine the keyboard. Now, I have a vested interest in these programs because I only have the use of one hand. And I'm sure, like most of us, the more we can cut down the number of keystrokes, the better. And that's just what these programs do. Now, the particular program I'd like to talk about is NewKey. It's a shareware program. I know there are other programs, one called SuperKey, for instance, and no doubt several others. I should say that the hardware that I'm using is something called Cortex Plus, a 10 megabyte hard disk, one floppy, 640K RAM, and I use the Frank audio data system. The NewKey program, of course, can be put in your AutoExecBAT file, and with the command to load your particular keyboard key definitions, and so it's therefore loaded up and ready as soon as you boot up. Now, you can put commands, words, or even text under one or two keys, and the sort of keys one can use, for instance, are the control plus letters or function keys, although I should say here you have to be very careful, of course, not to use those control letter keys that might be used, say, in WordStar, because you'll get a clash and neither will function, either NewKey or WordStar. You can use the Alt key with letters, and of course in both cases you can use both lower and upper case. So in fact I think you can have seven layers of keyboard definitions. You've also got to have, of course, a seven-layered mind memory to remember what definitions you've put under what key. I personally use the Alt plus letters and quite a few numbers, purely because it's on the left-hand side of the keyboard and I can only use my left hand. And I think the best way to describe NewKey to you is to give you examples of the sort of commands and things I've got on it. For instance, I have a diary program which I've written myself. I find these commercial ones a bit too sophisticated with too many time slots in them, and the one I've written just has two slots per day. To run that, I would have to type in cd/bas, because it's a basic program in my basic directory, followed by return, and then type GB, not for getting better, but for GWIS basic, space, and then the name of the program, cal88, and return. I think that's about 16 keystrokes. And in fact, now all I have to do is Alt followed by Z, and that runs my calendar, so it's very quick to run. The calendar program, in fact, is loaded in a RAM drive, because again I find it much quicker to run it than to run it off disk. And of course before you switch off the computer you must copy the data file with all the diary information onto a disk. For me that is Control F1 under NewKey, and it will automatically, say, copy the data file to the hard disk and also to my backup floppy. Alt 0, for instance, will copy all .dat files in BASIC onto my floppy. To type the word St. Dunstan's, I would have to sort of shift S and space and shift D and so on, and apostrophe S at the end. Well, I've just put that on the square bracket key, which I hardly use. A shifted square bracket stands will print the word St. Dunstan's for me. My own home address, to put at the top left of my letter, is just Alt Y, and so on and so forth. So it is extremely useful. And the way the program works, it contains three files altogether on disk: newkey.exe, newkey1.exe, which I'll describe in a minute. And newkey.doc, a document on how it works. Once you've loaded the newkey.exe, all you have to do is type Alt equals, followed by the keys you wish to redefine, so you would then say type Alt F9, and then go on straight away to type the words or commands or text that you wished those keys to hold in memory, and then Alt equals again to finish off the description. Now, in order to save those key definitions, you have to use newkey1.exe. And this, in fact, when you run it, throws up a menu with 8 options. Number 1 is, in fact, tells you those keys that you have defined, which is quite useful, as I said earlier on, if you forget what you've put under where. Anyway, this simply tells you what keys you have redefined. Option 2 enables you to type those keys and find out what you have put under the specific key combination. Option 3 enables you to save the definitions to a file. So, of course, you could have several different files for programming or word processing, etc. Key number 4, option 4, enables you to load a particular set of definitions. 5 enables you to merge these definition files. 6 clears the key definitions. 7, I'm afraid I've forgotten what that one is. And 8, I think, is exit to DOS. So, you have many options there. Just one or two words of warning about some of these memory resident programs. First of all, I have found that NewKey will... You have to be very careful sometimes in what order you load these memory resident programs at the beginning. Now, for instance, I use a program called Boost, which is rather like Sidekick, with a calendar, puts a date in your letter, address list, etc. And in fact, you cannot use NewKey 1 with Boost in memory. However, it doesn't stop you, you know, loading up your definitions before you load Boost, and therefore it can operate all the time. I've already mentioned the fact that you've got to be very careful, obviously, in the key combinations you select to redefine in case they do clash with others in other programs. And finally, you can, of course, redefine some of the keys before you embark upon a particular project without necessarily saving them to a file. For instance, you're about to write a letter, you know you're going to use one particular word frequently, so just before you say run WordStar, you can quickly redefine some keys, get into your letter and use them, and of course the next time you reboot, your original definitions will be put back under those keys. So it is a very, very simple program. And I'm sure actually has a lot more enhancement than I personally have used. But it says a one-handed person cutting down on keystrokes, excellent. May I mention just very briefly another program that's useful for somebody who might only have the use of one hand. For instance, I was telephoned the other day by somebody who had a stroke and could only use his left hand. And it's relevant because it is produced by Paul Blankhorn at Dolphin, bless his heart. It's called the TAP program, and as the name implies, you simply tap either the Shift, Control, or Alt, and it makes a bleep as you do it, and then the letter following that tap is deemed to have been pressed at the same time as the Alt, Shift, or Control. So, for instance, if I have to do Control P, that's a hell of a stretch for one hand on an IBM keyboard. Well, of course, I just have to tap Control and then go over to the letter P, and all is well. And in fact, if you tap those Control Alt or Shift twice and it makes a higher pitch bleep the second time, it's as though those keys are being held down permanently until you tap them a third time, which then it produces a burp sort of sound, and that releases those keys. So you never know, but there may be some people who are having difficulties that you know of and can pass that program on to them. Again, shareware, but £16 only, and well worth the value for those of us that need it. May I say that should anybody like either NewKey or TAP under, of course, the shareware rules and regulations, I'd be very happy to copy it for them. If you'd please send a formatted disk to me, Ray Hazan, H-A-Z, A-N, of at St. Dunstan's, D-U-N-S-T-A-N, apostrophe S, and that's 12 to 14 Harcourt Street, H-A-R-C-O-U-R-T, Harcourt Street, W-1-A-4-X-B for Bravo. Daytime telephone number is 01-723-5021, or at home in the evenings on 01-968-4294. And obviously, please, your return address enclosed. And may I leave you with just one final thought? Can you tell the experience of the user by the length of his auto exec bat file? Goodbye.
Many, many thanks for that, Ray. For those of you who are not sure about some of those terms that Ray used, we'll be looking at them later on Side 2. However, just room for an article by Mike Dunlop down in Exeter on the rest of this side. And Mike's sitting in front of his Opus PC3.
I want to say a few things about Memory Mate. Now, this is a name which is well known to quite a few of you, I believe. I was made a present of this on a distribution disc when I first acquired my PC. The makers call it a wonderfully flexible data management system, and they do not lie. It's a free-form database. In other words, you have no fields, you just have single records, but the records can be quite lengthy. In the distribution version, you're allowed 60 lines. In the registered version, you have a maximum of 120 lines per record. In the distribution version, you have, I think, 80K as the length of your database. With a hard disk in this one, hang on to your chairs, you have 2 megabytes of disk space for your database. Not only that, but you can swap from database to database. You have a command here, an extra command, which is not known in the shareware version, a thing called Go. Press that command, and you get a little menu up with all your databases listed. The thing comes with about a couple of three giveaway David databases. There's quite a good miniature MS-DOS manual, a thing called DOS Help. And then there's one called Reference, another one called Telno, which give you a lot of telephone numbers and a few microlink numbers, I think. Not a great deal of good to me, because I don't communicate very much, not with my PC. However, the one I use normally is called Hold All, which is just my scratch pad, my working database. The one in the background is Journal, where I'm keeping a verbose diary, and is quite easy to swap from one to the other. You have the facility of cut and paste, of course, either cut or ditto, cut being taking stuff out, deleting stuff from one place and putting it in another, and ditto, copying, leaving the thing, but marking it, saving it, and putting it in somewhere else. Quite a useful thing. Supposing now I've got this thing up, I'm in the middle of writing a letter to the Whistler, so we'll say find Whistler, shall we? Several ways of getting this find command. Either I can do a control F going on the initial letter, or I can press escape, which highlights my command. It's highlit there. I haven't got the thing set to read it, but it's up as fine. Find. I can then again press my initial letter, or since the thing is highlit, I can just press return. Rumbles away and asks me what I want to find. So we'll just say Whistler.
Whistler.
Hard disk jumping up. And here comes a screen, and Whistler is actually halfway down. I can see a highlight there, so I don't think this is a screen I want. We'll just see. I have got this set up with Hal, as you hear, and I have the thing divided up into windows. So I'm going into window 3, which is a little window on the top right-hand corner of the screen. It'll tell me, first of all, that F1 is for help, but then listen to what it says after that.
3 F1 for help, Lighthouse 2000.
Ah, so there are two records with Whistler in them.
Plus.
Press my plus, and there we are. I can see it in the top left-hand corner there. We'll just do a cursor read of this.
This
is the one we want, isn't it? Now, supposing I want that address out of there. So we'll go to the beginning of the line, and I'll do a Control D. I could either do Control D, I could do Escape D, I could do Escape and move my cursor along to find the ditto command. However, the easiest thing here is a Control D. Then as I go down to the next line, the lines become highlighted.
Bridgewater
There we are. Now that's highlighted that, and I'm going to take and to confirm it with a return. Now then, I'm going to get out of my memory mate by pressing Control E, and I'm now sitting in my HALED, which I'd previously loaded, with the cursor flashing away 4 lines below the date. So then I'll do a paste, which is Control P. And there in front of your eyes, it's typing out the Whistler. I'll have to do some reformatting there, because I can see that the Whistler itself is indented and the rest is not. Here we are, let's find it.
Sunderset period, SFIHLG, Red Water, Canberra, Cassington, Canberra, Wi-Fi, Park, Close, Canberra.
There we are, it's there, but as I say, in need of reforming. So that we can do in due order. But we'll get back into our memory mates now. Now, what do I do with this? Well, just about everything. It's the thing I get up every day. It's got a reminder date on it, so on this particular screen, so that every day I get straight into it. Now, one of the things I do since I've been retired is I'm a telephone responder for a certain voluntary fellowship, and we run a sort of helpline on a remote call forwarding system. So that the screen I have up now is my log, as you will hear from this.
Rookfactive log.
Rookfactive is RCF, that's remote call forwarding system log. It's the active one, because when I finished with them, I renamed them old log and put them down without a memory mate. And this, as you would imagine, is the log of the last week or two of the telephone calls. You can take the first one, of course.
124/0/
Monday the 24th of the 10th. Take over from Michelle at 8:30 on that on last Monday morning. Do you notice that date, by the way? One thing about the commercial version is that you have a very good setup program with it. You can do all sorts of things with this. One thing you have to do, monoscreen or not, you do have to get your colours settled. Because if you get the wrong colours for the display, then parts of it are not going to show up. And as far as I'm concerned, it hangs, because I find it most off-putting to be faced with a black screen. You may be able to hear something through HAL, I don't know, but I couldn't see anything. Roger Goodchild sussed this one out for me, and as I say, the question is to work through your setup program, and then it takes you through the various colour selections, and if you get the right one, and I think between us we found that black and cyan were the two colours that show up best on this thing. Do set that up. The other things that you can set up, some of the other things anyway, are the question of setting a page format for memos. You can type each record out, or you can type a whole string of retrieved records out. You can either type them as you have put them in, or you can get these formatted word processor fashion by setting up parameters such as a left and right margin of 10, a top and bottom margin of so much. And as I say, you can set the date to come up in the international version, or this American one, the daft way of putting the months before the days. What else? There's a hyper command that I don't use very much. What you can do, if you're really using this as a sort of brain model with ideas all over the place and room to digress, or to think laterally. You could type in a sort of fairly verbose piece of text. The example they give is one on kangaroos. Who wants to write about kangaroos? God only knows. But you might then want to refer to Australia and refer across quickly. Well, you can. When the first, when the Australia comes up, first of all, you press your hyper command and you make a button. In other words, Australia then becomes a button to shoot you off somewhere else. You press that button by getting your cursor onto the Australia and then pressing for the hyper command, and it gives you a little menu, one of them being go. You press the go command there, and you find yourself in another screen all about Australia. And there, for example, you might want to go across to the Great Australian Bight or the Great Barrier Reef, and you can do this by setting up other buttons, and so on ad infinitum. And you can even make them go round in a circle and bring them back to the original place. Or you can press, once you've got your hyper menu on the screen, you can press R to return. I find this a ticklish one to use, because if you modify records, they tend to get shifted in the database and not so easy to find. So there we are. The one thing to draw attention to, as I said, is that your records can be up to 120 lines long, and that your database can be up to 2 megabytes, which is a lot of space for the kind of data that I want to keep anyway. So this I'm using, as I say, every day of my life, and I find very useful. Well, you've had my scatterbrain version of it. If you want to pick my brains and pin me down to any particular feature of it, I'd be glad to help if I can. And my telephone number, if you haven't already picked it up, is Exeter, that's 0392 434149. So take care, everybody. Be speaking to you again one of these days, I expect. Bye-bye.
Well, many thanks to both Mike Dunlop and Ray Hazan there on side one. That was super. Two of the few remaining gentlemen, in my opinion. I'm recording this actually very late in November, and recording over what I had originally done. Originally, in this spot, was a thing about tailoring the Mimic speech synthesizer to run on the Beeb. And I continue on side two with tailoring the Apollo. So I decided that the following announcement was so important that I talk over this part. It does continue on side two, and I think it will still all make sense. Let me start off by giving you an address. It's for Richard Bartholomew, and it's number 33 Firhill Crescents. That's Firhill, F-I-R-R-H-I-L-L, Firhill Crescent, Edinburgh, and the postcode is EH13 9EW. Richard's telephone number is 031-441-1039. Richard is going to start a disk library. This is for help disks, things like the DOS help disk and this kind of thing. So please ignore what I say elsewhere on the tape about sending me disks. Please send disks to Richard, and he will make copies for you either on 3.5 or 5.25-inch format. But please don't ignore the fact that postage and packing is absolutely essential, please. So please make it easy for Richard. Richard is a blind HAL user. He's also a systems analyst. Good, just got that in time. Yes, Richard's a good bloke. I'm sure you'll find him very helpful. Secondly, TANAUK, the Talking Newspaper Association of the United Kingdom, have started to produce a PC magazine on tape. It's called PCA, which stands for PCs and Other Clones. It's coming out monthly, and if you're interested, please contact them on 0435-261-02. There's the phone. Right, well, we're rapidly coming towards the end of side one now. Side two starts off with me sitting in front of the BBC computer with the Apollo plugged in, and I'll be doing exactly the same thing with the Apollo as I did for the Mimic. So this is the end of side one. Please turn the tape over now or during the music. Thank you. Okay, here we are, back again, now on side two. Let's try booting up the program to run the Apollo Taylor.
Program loaded. This basic program will set up a BBC computer to run the Apollo speech synthesizer by Dolphin Systems. Do you wish to run the program? Enter Y or N.
So it's asked me if I want to run the program, and I enter Y.
Enter required speed.
Enter the required speed. Let's put in a silly speed, shall we? 99.
Choose a number between 0 and 15. Enter required speed.
Right. Choose a number between 0 and 15. Let's put in 11. Oh my goodness me, no, that's too fast. Are you happy, Y or N? N. Let's try putting in 5.
This is the new speed setting. Are you happy? Enter Y or N.
Oh, that sounds reasonable. Let's press Y.
Enter required pitch.
The required pitch. Let's put in a funny one. Let's put in 1 and see what that sounds like.
This is the new speed setting. Are you happy? Enter Y or N.
No.
Enter required pitch.
Right, let's put in 11. See what that sounds like.
This is a new pitch setting. Are you happy? Enter Y or N.
Not quite.
Enter required pitch.
I think 9.
This is a new pitch setting. Are you happy? Enter Y or N.
Oh yes, I'm happy with that. Why?
Enter required prosody.
Now, prosody is the actual excitability of the voice, and I do like a little bit of excitability in my voice, so how about number 5?
This is the new prosody setting. Are you happy? Enter Y or N.
Yes, I am.
Enter required pause.
Now, the pause setting is actually the inter-word pause, the length of time that the synthesizer pauses in between words. And I like the words to run into one another, so let's press 1.
This is the new pause setting. Are you happy? Enter Y or N.
Yes, I think I'm happy with that, so I'll press Y.
The Apollo is now configured to your requirements.
And it said the Apollo is now configured to your requirements. So I can now run, load, well, for instance, the excellent Research Centre screen readers, the RCEVH screen reader, the Talking WordWise Plus, and also the Talking Intersheet screen readers for the Beeb. They really are very good, and I can run them with the Apollo at the much faster setting. Now, this is a temporary thing because the RCEVH, Malcolm at the RCEVH, was telling me that they are actually going to try and build something into the screen readers so as to be able to alter the Apollo from the keyboard in the same way as you can from HAL on the PC. So that's coming soon. But in the meantime, there are these two programs. And if you want a copy, send me a 5 1/4 inch disc, please. Please will you make it a blank 5 1/4 inch disc, because I've got a 4080 switchable machine, and you know what havoc that can cause on a disc that's already been formatted. So send me a blank 5 1/4 inch floppy disc, and I'll make you a copy with pleasure and return it to you. Please, please, please send suitable postage and packing for returning it, because sometimes I get parcels and I just manage to rip the parcel open to find inside that it's a disc that is required to be returned. And if you make it easy for me, I can guarantee you that I'll turn them around within 24 hours. Thanks ever so much. Well, now that I've done my little bit, I'm going to sit back and relax and listen to a very interesting article by Henry Bruch on using a modem with a PC. So, over to Henry.
Hello, Henry.
Who said that?
My name is Henry Bruch, B-R-U-G-S-C-H. I'm a piano tuner technician trained in the United States at Perkins School, Watertown. I'm in my mid-40s, graduated Tufts University back in the States, came over here 2 years ago to live, and I'm now a resident piano tuner in Kidderminster. I've been playing with computers since 1983, when I got a hold of a Franklin, which was an Apple-type clone, and started getting involved with the speech programs, where I did some work with a communications program called Talking TermExec, which was originally designed for sighted users, but I convinced the author that it'd be a very nice and noble thing if she were to make it run with speech. And then after that, I started writing a few articles for Byte magazine, and just in general, getting involved in computers on a fairly intense level, if not unproductive. And now, I've got this SBC clone, this SBC IBM clone, with the HAL speech and the and beta testing the Apollo synthesizer, which you will be hearing in the course of this talk. Normally I use an Echo GP, but just for the record, I find the Apollo is 100 times better. And that's purely a subjective evaluation, because I can't prove it is 100 times better, but at any rate, I think it is one of the finest things to come along in the past few years. Having said that, let's get down to business and discuss telecommunications. If you hear an odd rumbling sound, it means that there's a train passing down the back garden. We live right next to the Seven Valley Railway tracks, and although it's the end of the weekly operating season, sometimes we do get a train coming through. So all you rail fans, keep your ears open. You might hear something.
Please.
Where to start with telecommunications? Well, what is telecommunications? Telecommunications is the transmitting of messages by your computer to another computer. Essentially, what it means is your computer is transformed from a self-contained, self-constricted device that interacts with itself and its user into a communications device like a telephone or a telegraphic device. Okay, having said that, what can we do with telecommunications? With telecommunications, you can exchange information such as messages, greetings, and the like, but you can also exchange software. I think this is understood by most users, but perhaps it won't hurt to review this. The ways in which computers talk to each other have been more or less standardized down the years, so that a CPM machine, a machine that's operating under CPM operating system, can talk to an MS-DOS machine and vice versa. But again, having said that, these standards are like our electrical plugs. Some are more standard than others. A few years ago, in Britain, we came out with a 3.25-inch standard and a 5-inch standard, and now we're up to a 13-amp standard, and this standard seems to have prevailed. Well, much the same sort of things have happened in telecommunications. Different baud rates have come into force, different data stream formats have come into play. For most of us, though, I think these questions are of limited importance as they become more or less transparent when we start working with the software and the programs involved. I think one rule of thumb to go by in telecommunications is stay with the defaults, and you can't go too far wrong. But having said that, you can. Anything I say here is going to be subject to exceptions, obviously, but you find that there are generalizations that can be made, but obviously you're going to find exceptions to these rules. So I've found, dealing over the last 5 or 6 years with telecommunications software, that if you leave things alone, they'll work right. Okay, in order to telecommunicate, what must we have? Well, first you've got to have a computer, that's obvious. Then you've got to have a piece of telecommunications software, which will make the computer talk to another computer. But above all, you've got to have a modem, which is modulator-demodulator, which is basically a device that takes the impulses that come out of the computer and turns them into something that can be sent down a phone line. basically it's just tones which wiggle back and forth between high and low. And these high and low tones are turned off at a rate that basically is turned into data flow. Okay, so this data flow is sent and received by and with modems. So in order to do telecommunications, you've got to have a computer, a telecommunications program, and a modem. So the first thing we do is hook up our modem to the computer, which can be either done by installing a slot modem, or I think, as is in the case over here in the UK, since the only approved modems are outboard, I believe, installing something like the Minor Miracles WS3000, I believe it's called. I'm not 100% sure on that, don't quote me, but I believe that's the name of the modem. And Amstrad also do a card modem, which is available for their machines, but I believe will run with most any system for a fairly reasonable price. Having acquired a modem, you then plug your telephone line into this modem, and usually there'll be another cable so that you can interface the phone line to the modem and your telephone, i.e. plug the telephone into the modem and then the modem into the telephone line and then the telephone line into the wall receptacle if that's the way your line is configured. Nowadays, we're coming over to a modular type plug which allows one to just plug the phone in straight into the wall. Now we're very lucky, the house where I moved into had four of these all over the place. You then plug in this modem and you plug in your computer, get yourself up and running, you load your terminal program. Now terminal programs are pretty much, most users tend to use public domain or shareware programs. Just to review quickly the shareware and public domain concept. Public domain software is software that is virtually given away free, except for the cost of the disk of either downloading it, either cost of the disk or downloading the software. Shareware means it's sort of based on the honor system, whereby if you download the program, you like it, you use it, and you make a lot of use of it, you're expected to pay for it. One of the best terminal communications programs I've come across is a thing called Procomm. P-R-O-C-O-M-M. It seems to work well with HAL, although I understand it doesn't work well with all of the screen readers out there. When I was back in the States, I'd mentioned that I was using Procomm with HAL, and the folks out there were quite surprised. So, at least as far as HAL goes, Procomm will work quite well. Procomm is probably one of the more comprehensive packages on the shareware scene, in as much as it'll give you 7 or 8 terminal protocols, which are basically systems for transferring files back and forth between you and other computers. As I've said, some things are more standard than others. Okay. I'm at the basic prompt. Let me turn up the speech here. I'm using the Dolphin Systems Apollo, as well as the HAL program. And I'm going to call up Procomm, and let's listen to it loading up.
Reading. Slower. Exit. P-R-O-C-O-M-M. C greater than. CD / Procomm. C greater than. Procomm. Left parent. PN right parent. Procomm version 2.4.2 copyright left parent C right parent 1985/1986 data storm technologies in period all rights reserved period.
And there we are, we're in the screen. One other feature this program has is a find feature. Now there's room for about I think 100 plus numbers on here. So they're all over the place. You say, oh, I want to call up the junction. So let's find
F
junction.
J-U-N-C-T-I-O-N.
All right. The thing squealed indicating that it found it. If it hadn't found it, it would have given off a sort of a beep. So reading. Let's have a look at it.
GIIN name number 4TDS60-Junction02705800991200-N-A-1M-Junction.
Okay, what's this telling us? We've got the junction.
Space 60 dash.
That's 60. That's number 60 in the dialing chart.
Junction.
Name of its junction?
02705800991.
And now everybody knows how to call the junction. That was the number for the junction. Dial?
Dash.
60. From the dialing menu, you just input the number 60. And presumably it's dialing.
Welcome to the junction left there in home of the Cheshire Cat Explanation. Right there in Met Mail address 253/191 SUPTORTING Wildcat Exclamation Sysox, the special needs user group. The visually impaired person's computer user group last caller was David Falk from True Cheshire at 2400 board. This caller spent 7 minutes online and has 233 minutes left for today period. The caller disconnected normally at 10:22. What is your first name question?
We're getting down to the login procedure.
H-E-M-R-Y. What is your last name question? B-R-U-G-S-C-H, looking up Henry Grunst, period, please wait, period, password, colon.
Switch off the speech.
You are the free comma, 5-40H, caller, period. This is your 5-1-ST, caller, period, P-H-E. J-U-N-C-T-I-O-N, left there in H-O-N-E-O-F-P-H-E-C-H-E-S-H-I-R-E, C-A-T exclamation, right there in 24HRS-A-D-A-Y-V-21/V-22/V-23/V-22-Biz, Y-O-U-R-S-Y-S-O-P-I-S-D-A-V-I-D. P-H-O-R-P, Henry Conger, here are a few fascinating facts for Wednesday, Conger, September 28, Conger, 1,
chatty,
1,
isn't
8,
it? Anyway, that's it as far as I'm going to take it just now, telephone rates being what they are. But that's to give you an idea of what it is like to log onto a bulletin board. Now, once you get the hang of the system, you will be able to Alt-M your way through a lot of this stuff, and you won't even notice it as it goes by, and plus the fact, presumably, you'll be operating at a higher rate of speed. I tend to operate at 2 notches above this one, and that gets you through. The trick is to move very quickly around while you're online, or else it becomes very prohibitively expensive. I mean, you are dealing with telecommunications charges, that is to say, your telephone bill at the end of the quarter. So, the name of the game is work quickly and, if you can, expertly. Obviously, that's hard to do. It's well enough to say, look at the board menu and download it first, but I find I never do that. I always just get up there and hack. But these programs, such as Procom, which I'm going into specifically, you've got various options on the program, which will allow you to have it look over your shoulder. There's a log command, which is activated by an Alt-2, which activates the log file, opens it up, and you can just download everything onto your floppy disk as you're working with the system. Then when you get done, you can say, well, what have I done? Let's have a look at it. You go back out, pop it into your program like HALED, and then you're away looking at the board and what's going on up there. You can also download individual screens. You can download whole files, as I've said before, using the various protocols. So let me give you my address. told you we might get interrupted, and that was one of the trains of the SVR. Actually, a bit of poetic license here, but who cares? That's dedicated for all the rail fans out there who are waiting, ears cocked, for something to happen. Anyway, my address for those of you who would like to send a disc and receive something back is Henry Brooksch, I'll spell my last name, B-R-U-G-S-C-H, 17, number 17, Kent Close, K-E-N-T, Close, Kidderminster, with two D's, K-I-D-D-E-R-M-I-N-S-T-E-R, Kidderminster, Works, W-O-R-C-S, period, for Worcestershire, D-Y, Dog Yankee 10, 1, Norway, Sierra. And now we've got a helicopter coming over. But at any rate, whatever your pleasure, feel free to get in touch, and I look forward to hearing from any or all of you, and look forward to receiving my first copy of the magazine, which, as of this taping, is seen yet.
Well, many thanks to Henry for that article. Henry is so enthusiastic about computing, it really is inspiring. Well, the last few minutes of the tape are going to be devoted to Beginner's Corner. You all want educating, don't you? Haha, I don't believe it. The first tip really is a basic one, and that is to read the manuals. It's so important. I was listening in to a phone-in the other evening. Apparently Nicholas Parsons, I think it was having problems with his Amstrad word processor, and he couldn't cope with it. And a guy phoned in who actually wrote computer manuals, and this is what he had to say on the subject of how long does it take to get used to a word processor.
That's very difficult to say. It does vary, vary tremendously.
Well, he's an intelligent man. He's an intelligent man, isn't he?
I would say...
He is, actually, because he devises all these quizzes and game shows.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the ones he does, you know.
Yeah.
I believe he's in this business with somebody else, and, you know, they do know what time it is down there.
Mm. I don't think it's as much intelligence as perhaps patience and application. That's the point, really.
Yeah.
I would have thought that, from my experience of other colleagues and of students learning word processing, that he should be able to get around it reasonably well after about 20, 25 hours' work.
Oh, that's a commitment. That's nearly marriage, isn't it?
Well, I wouldn't call that long.
No.
Take you certainly as long as that to learn to drive a car.
This is true. This is very true, Paul. Yes, this is true. And I've driven behind those people that did it in 25 hours, as I'm sure you have. And my insurance company will be calling in the morning. No, seriously. Paul, thank you for taking the trouble to call and put the voice of reason.
Well, there you are. Somebody else agrees. The mental equivalent of elbow grease, alas, is required to get on with a computer and with the word processor. So it doesn't come immediately. It does take work. And I have actually rewritten the manuals for HAL. They come in two sections now. There's an introductory one and there's an advanced user's guide. And they're split up into seven lessons for each. Talking about HAL's speech now. So if you want a copy, please send me a disc and I'll send you the manuals on disc and you can load them into HALED, say, and have a look at them and go through them in that way. But it is so important to start with lesson one and to understand lesson one before going on to lesson two, etc., etc. So that's the first tip for beginners, to really read the manuals. Send me a disc. I can cope nowadays with either 5 1/4 or 3.5-inch formats. And again, please, please make it easy for me to send them back to you. Thanks. Tip number two is to be agile on the keyboard. This morning, a user phoned me up saying that he was having problems with HALED, that when he did Control K followed by a D for keep document, it was saying end block. Well, of course, what was happening was that he was depressing the control key and whilst control was down, he was pressing K, and in such a way that K came out twice, so that it, in fact he was doing a control KK, and control KK is the command for end block. So when you do a control K, press down the control key and just tap the K, and then go on to tap the other key. Be nice and agile in that way, rather than sort of leaning with the old elbow on the keys. It comes up time and time again. That was just one example which happens to come to mind, but this has happened many times in the past, and it's so important to really just tap a key under those circumstances. Of course, if you were to lean on a key in that way when you are actually editing your document, you'd notice it, because it would be repeated several times. So tip number two is agility. Tip number three is to do with batch files. Now, if you pop a disk into drive A, you can find out what's on that disk by entering the command DIR, that's Delta India Romeo, /W for whiskey. So that's DIR /W, and then hit carriage return. The disk will whir, and up will come the directory of the disk on the screen. You can examine that by screen reading, and you'll find maybe a file or two with the file extension BAT, as in bat and ball. That signifies that that particular file is a batch file, and you can load it in to a word processor such as Haled and examine it. If you do that, you'll find a list of commands, one under another. It's rather like commands which maybe you carry out first thing in the morning. The first one could be get out of bed, second one wash, third one turn on the radio, fourth one eat breakfast, etc. And that's what a batch file is. It gives a list of commands to the computer. Now, there's one very special batch file called the autoexec.bat, and that's spelled AUTOEXEC full stop BAT, and that is a file that the computer looks for when it's first turned on, and if it finds one, it'll carry out the list of commands contained within it. Now, some of the commands are fairly important to do with the system, and the path command, etc. However, we can load this into our Haled word processor, get right down to the last command, and then add a command of our own on the next line. For example, we could put in the letters CLS, which would clear the screen. Different programs are available, for example, which print the date and time up on the screen. This is one that I use myself in my autoexec.bat file. Others have programs which play little tunes, and still others have messages printed up, for example, "Good morning, David. Now it's time to start work." So, this all goes to explain Ray Hazan's comment at the end of his article: can you tell the experience of the user by the length of his or her autoexec.bat file? Well, there we are. Three hints, tips, explanations for beginners. I hope they were of value. Well, we're coming rapidly to the end of this side of the tape now, so I must go. We'll be back with the March issue number 3 of The Whistler, and Henry will have another article on that, and so will Mike Dunlop, so plenty of things to look forward to. So from me, David, thanks for listening. Have a super Christmas. Bye-bye for now. Bye-bye. Thank you.